This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Welcome to this session. We're going to be looking at the subject, I'm serving Jesus. Why am I depressed? Do I need something else here? No. Okay. You can hear me okay in the back. I'll try to speak up. If you have trouble hearing, don't be afraid to let me know. I'd like to going to be looking at a number of biblical characters and trying to learn what we can from the connection between serving and being depressed. So, good news here. Serving Jesus may increase your chances of becoming depressed. Some of God's most faithful servants have had severe downtimes. And I'd like to look at a number of examples of this. We're not going to spend a lot of time on these, but just listen to the language here from Moses. And I'm going to ask somebody from the group to read this, maybe on this side. You mind doing this one? Jay, right? Okay.
Do you want me to read that?
Yes, read it. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Why have you dealt ill with your servant, and why have I not found favor in your sight, that you lay the burden of all this people on me? I am not able to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once, if I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness.
All right. So here we have a man of God, and we're going to come back to this one, just spend a little time here. Numbers 11, significant account here where Moses gets so discouraged, and he just says, like, am I their mother, like, that I have to take of all these children? It reminds me of somebody when one of our children got married, he said, God bless you with the something about the blessing of Abraham and the something of Isaac and the children of Israel. And so that's what Moses was blessed with, the children of Israel. And he had to take care of all these people. And he felt like an overburdened mother just said, let me die. We have also Elijah then, and maybe I didn't think about this for the recording. Maybe I should read it. I'd like to get you involved, but I will get you involved a bit later here. Listen to what happened with Elijah. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. You know what had happened before with the 400 prophets of Baal. Then he was afraid, and he rose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. And just, we probably have trouble with geography here because we're not familiar, but Elijah was in Jezreel, which was in northern Israel. So he runs to Beersheba, which is in southern Israel. And typically that's about a three-day journey at least. All right, so he goes there. And then it says he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. So he's running here into the wilderness, came and sat down under a broom tree. He asked that he might die. Very similar to what we see in Moses here. And he says, it is enough now. What he means is it's way too much. Okay, but in the Hebrew language, that's really what it means here. It's enough, Lord. Can't take it. Take away my life, for I'm no better than my fathers. We have also then David's example. And David says, I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me? Now, I will insert here, this is Psalm 42. Psalm 42 and 43 actually are thought to have been written maybe together initially, but both of them have the same question in it, why art thou cast down, and so on. But and it's in the Psalms, there we don't have the heading saying that David wrote this, but it is in Hebrew tradition, the way I understand, typically attributed to David. We don't know what kind of situation, but certainly if we think about Saul chasing him around the country for a number of years, his father-in-law, by the way, hoping none of you have father-in-laws like Saul, but David Why go I mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As with a deadly wound in my bones, my adversaries taunt me, while they say to me all day long, where is your God? And again, we want to be careful mapping it too closely on David's life, but the reality was that while David was being chased around, his reputation was also being damaged by Saul. Saul was spreading things. There were things that were said about David that were not true. We just get some of the glimpses of that in the accounts, and then also some in the Psalms that David wrote. So where is your God? And just these all happened after Goliath. Okay, so where is your God? Why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet again praise him, for my salvation is from God. We have this repeated in Psalm 42. We also have it then again in Psalm 42. Why are you cast down? And I won't have time here to talk about all the recovery from depression, but you'll notice here that whoever the psalmist was did something that we all have to do sometimes, kind of grab himself by the scruff of the neck and say, okay, this is enough now. Why are you cast down? We have to talk to ourselves. Get your attention back on God. Hope in God, for I shall yet again praise him. So, I'd like to move to the next slide then here. I'm going to try to do this in a good way. I'm not certain what's wrong with my computer, but it's not giving me the... I have to look to the slides here, okay? So I can't follow along. So just if you see me doing that. So a question here is, why am I depressed? And particularly if I'm serving Jesus, why am I depressed? And before we go to the because or the reasons that often happen, we're going to be looking at Numbers 11. If you have your Bibles and are wanting to turn along, follow along, that's where we're going to be going. A number of years ago, I was asked to speak to a large gathering of missionaries. And they had this gathering. It wasn't Reach, by the way, but I was this large gathering of missionaries. And I was asked to speak on the subject of depression, also on some other subjects that were related to that. But it wasn't long into the series that I was speaking in which people from, you know, serving God, they've given their lives, they've gone to different countries and so on, they started coming forward and start talking about their depression and struggling, and they were frustrated and they were embarrassed. Some of them feeling really, really guilty. Like, why am I depressed? I came with vision. So why? If we look at Moses' example, we're going to be especially trying to learn from this in Numbers 11. First of all, there's always more. In ministry, there is always more to do, more work to do than can be done. And I want to say this particularly if God has blessed you with a serving heart. Okay, you're going to see more opportunities than you can ever accomplish. I remember listening to a Baptist preacher who distinguished between what he called a burden and a call. And he said, everywhere I go, I get a burden. I mean, he said, I visit a city ministry and I get a burden for the city. I go to a foreign mission and I get a burden for foreign missions. He said, I go to a children's ministry and I get a burden for children. I get a burden wherever I go. But he said, what's my calling? Okay, we're going to pause with that. Won't carry it forward. We'll come back to it later. So in ministry, there's always more to do than we can do. In Moses' ministry, if we go back to chapter 18... Fascinating that Art just mentioned this account. Jethro saw Moses serving the people from morning to evening as the account. And Jethro says, look, you can't keep this up. You're going to wear yourself out and you're going to wear the people out by this because it's too much for you. We have the account also in Mark 6. A fascinating account there where the disciples were in a similar situation where they it says they didn't even have time to eat. Okay, this is, if I get the sequence properly, they actually had just come back from a missionary trip. Jesus had sent them out, They had come back, and ahead of this also, John the Baptist had been beheaded. And you've got a number of things converging here. Okay, then you've got people, the crowds of people, and the disciples apparently want to report to Jesus. They want to talk, and they're excited about what all had happened, but there's so many people, and they don't even have time to eat. In ministry, there's always more work. And one of the questions that we face in ministry is, how do I learn to say no, or how do I learn to refer, or how do I learn to just say to that I need to get away. So again, we'll come back to that a bit later. Secondly, we can become depressed because in ministry we are asked to do the impossible. These points are just really encouraging, folks. But we are asked to do the impossible. You know, God told Moses, lead my people out of Egypt. How do you do that? He doesn't have an army. Moses knew what the Egyptian military was like, okay? Moses understood the situation of his people being oppressed and so on. Of course it was impossible for him to do this. But Moses actually, in another sense, was not asked to lead them. Well, he was asked to lead them, but he was basically asked to obey God. And that's what we're asked to do, okay? Obey God, not so much. We do what God tells us to do, and he'll do the rest. He does the impossible part. That's God's part. The children of Israel, at one point, you know, they came into a desert, leading them through the desert, an impossible task, okay? There's no water for these people at various places, and God tells Moses, strike the rock, okay? Well, that's what Moses is supposed to do. You just obey. He strikes the rock, and God does the impossible, okay? And they wail over him, we don't have any food, we don't have any meat to eat. We're tired of this manna. That happens in chapter 11, the one that we're looking at. And Moses says, where am I to get meat for all these people? And God says, I'm going to give them so much meat that they're going to eat it for 30 days. It's going to run out of their ears. Okay. And Moses says, God, if you would get all the fish of the sea, how in the world could this be? And God says, you do your part, I'll do my part. Okay. And God provided. He did. He brought the quails in, and they ate themselves stuffed. And so it's easy for us to be overwhelmed sometimes because we see the impossible. In ministry, we are going to face physical needs. We are going to face relational needs. We're going to face spiritual needs, and sometimes it'll just seem to us like it is impossible, and then what really happens is that they all come at once, okay? And they're knocking at our door, and they're pulling on us and wanting things from us. Ministry, many times we are facing what seems impossible. Ministry also, that says brings, it should say makes. I can't remember for sure what's on your outline, where the blank is, but
the blank is on the end.
On the end, okay. Ministry actually makes us more aware of evil. And this can feel overwhelming to us many times. In this situation, you have Moses being, in Numbers 11, you have Moses experiencing these people. Actually, it was a mixed multitude, some of the Egyptians involved here too. And you wonder what all goes through Moses. That might have been part of his anger here, I don't know, in his response. But ministry often brings us right up against the powers of evil, the worst side of humanity. Ministry exposes us to that. You know, I don't know how many of you are ordained. I just ask, how many are ordained? How many of you are ordained ministers? Okay, a few of you, not very many. Pastoring will bring us into awareness and contact with the worst part of our congregation. That's what it does, okay? How many of you have served in mission work in other countries? Okay, many of you, a lot of hands here. Missionaries get exposed to robbery, false accusation. They get exposed to anger. They expose to demonic harassment, to ingratitude, and sometimes to outright persecution. Ministry makes us aware of evil. Paul wrote to the Corinthians about being overwhelmed in his ministry in Asia, and he says, for we do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. Okay, so here's a man veteran, okay, but he knows what it's like to be overwhelmed. He knows what it's like to be exposed to evil. And I'll just say, constant exposure to evil can wear on us. We need to recognize that. Recognize that it's not just an incident, but the constant exposure. I was involved in at Deeper Life Ministries for 12 years as a marriage counselor. And one of the things that I realized there, sometime into my tenure there, recognized that the continual exposure, the regular exposure to sin, was wearing on my soul. Just has a wearing effect, you know. And we sometimes are struggling with feeling down with that constant exposure to evil. Fourth reason, looking at Moses here, ministry often puts us on our own in unfamiliar territory. You'll notice the language of Moses here. He says, I can't do this on my own. It's like it's just too much. And I didn't read the account here, but just listen to his language. Going back to Numbers 11, verse 10, Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone at the door of his tent. Now, the Hebrews, by the way, weren't as inhibited as we are in our weeping. They wailed, okay? So Moses, hearing this, Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant, and why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all these people on me?" Listen to the first-person pronouns. Did I conceive all these people? Did I beget them that you should say to me, "Carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land to which you swore to their fathers"? Where am I to get meat to give all these people? Hear the I? Okay, here. "For they weep all over me, saying, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' I am not able to bear all these people alone." You hear that? The aloneness. "Because the burden is too heavy for me." It goes on to say, "If you treat me like this, just kill me. Just take me, take my life." Moses feeling alone. And here we have then God moving in with 70 helpers. And it's just a fascinating, you know, one man's load, suddenly 70 people are helping him. I thought an ungodly thought here. Wouldn't you want to wail a little bit like Moses if you're in your situation, okay? Maybe God will show up with 70 people. Wouldn't that be great? But humor aside, God gave his spirit to these men and is such a blessing to Moses. So I'd like to have you, I'm sorry, did I not? Oh, one more here, number five. The people we are serving often have little awareness of the cost of ministry. People who are in need seldom understand what it means when you are asked to meet those needs. They expect us not only to meet their needs, but they also expect us to do it with a good attitude, right? They can be demanding, they can be angry, they can be greedy, but they expect us to be kind and gracious and considerate and mature, generous. They expect us to be sacrificial and smile while we do it, okay? Those are the expectations, and if we don't meet those expectations, they can be caustic, they can be critical of. So these are some of the things here. The other thing I see here, number six, when needs are greatest, support may be lowest. So just learning from Moses, why are we depressed? I've just listed a number of things here, but I'd like to switch this now. I'm sorry, I don't want you to see that. Okay. I want you to go back and look at that list, okay? And I want you to actually work on this, and I'd encourage you not to do it alone. Talk to each other a little bit and just try to put a name. What's actually happening in each of these situations? How would you label these? What's going on? Okay, just talk to each other a little bit about this. Try to name these six things. Yeah, you can talk to each other. Go ahead. Yes. Okay, I don't know how far you got, but let's just hear. So the first one, what would you say? Over? What? Overload. Okay, that's what I put. I'm sorry, we'll have to keep this back up here. But overloaded, overworked. In ministry, we're asked to do the impossible. What do you feel?
Overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed. What else?
Inadequate.
Inadequate.
Discouraged.
Discouraged, yeah. Okay, and ministry brings us more aware of evil.
Fearfulness.
Fearfulness, yeah.
Vulnerability.
Burdened. Uh-huh. Ministry takes place in unfamiliar surroundings.
Loneliness.
Disoriented.
Lack of confidence. Good. Okay, and people who we are serving often have little awareness of the cost of ministry.
Frustration.
Loneliness of being there.
Self-pity.
Sorry, I heard stereo.
Self-pity,
uh-huh. And, okay, where needs are greatest, support maybe lowest.
Overwhelmed.
Frustration,
yeah,
depletion.
Yeah. What?
Depletion,
uh-huh. This is good. I listed a number of things here. These may not all correspond, but in these situations, so I'm serving Jesus. Why am I depressed? Well, sometimes we're overloaded, inadequate. We feel overwhelmed. We are lonely. Underappreciated. I don't know if you said that one, but that's often a struggle, okay? We're knocking ourselves out and underappreciated. Burned out. And I don't know if I have more there. Okay, so those are some of the things that I listed. But I have another question for you. Are there other reasons? So, talk to each other. I'm not going to give you a long time, but are there other reasons that we've not named? We're looking mostly at Moses' example. Not everybody's as like his, and there are going to be other things that cause depression. I have a whole list of them, okay? So, talk to each other a little bit. Why else do people get depressed? Okay, I don't know if you've exhausted your list or whatever, but here's some good conversations going on here that I will not repeat, okay? That's great. Just good to hear. What did you say? Why do people get depressed?
Buried anger.
Okay.
Stress.
Entitlement.
Can you explain?
We feel like we're serving, so we're entitled to something.
Okay. Especially maybe getting some recognition, maybe, or help or support. Or
lack of, and number five, lack of trust to God to resupply after we have depleted.
Uh-huh, lack of trust that God will supply when we're depleted.
I think one good thing is just because you're in ministry does not mean you're super Christian.
Uh-huh.
Personal struggles, interpersonal struggles with your team, that can be a huge stressor. And just like dealing with your own emotions and relationship with God.
Uh-huh. So you're saying a number of things there. One of them, the interpersonal tensions can be draining, for one thing. But I hear you saying one of the reasons we struggle is because of our expectations of ourselves may be unrealistic. Is that okay? What else?
Distraction.
Can you describe it?
One will be TV or sports or anything else that you get your attention to.
Okay, and you're saying that may be taking energy and keeping, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Perfectionism.
Good.
Disappointments or unfulfilled desires. desires.
Ah, unfulfilled desires, disappointments, yes.
I'm thinking about what Mother Teresa said, but this is too perfect. I need you to help me with this. She said the only thing that would carry her through in her ministry there in Calcutta was her love for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you could really kill a lot of people with saying you're depressed because you don't love Jesus.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, help me here.
Uh-huh. Can we help him? He's asking for it. So why? Like, that was fascinating. It'd be interesting to see the context for that in which she said that. The reality is that Mother Teresa, though her public face was one of humble service, she struggled significantly with dark questions about her own relationship with the Lord and so on. That's a side that we often don't hear much about. But she's saying her love for Jesus is the only thing that sustains her. What response is there?
Can we define the difference between deep discouragement and clinical depression?
So what's the difference between deep discouragement and clinical depression? We're going to have to keep moving here. Just mention a couple of things. So discouragement typically has to do with an incident or situation. It is typically temporary. Depression, clinical depression, ends up being, one term would be global. It affects everything. It's not just about this, but it's about everything in my life seems awful. It is continuous. It's not just temporary. Just a couple of quick maybe differentiations there. I listed a number of things here. One that you have not named, but physiological breakdown, folks. That's a reality. And the thing is, sometimes depression may start with that. Sometimes it might become that. Okay, under stress for a long time, for example, may actually result in physiological breakdown. If we read the story of Elijah, we're not going there. If we go to the story of Elijah, remember all the running that he did? Well, you know what happened before that? Intense ministry. He's on this mountain. Folks, I don't know what in the world. The emotional energy that would have taken to have that contest there, and then all these prophets were killed, and then Elijah ran 17 miles to Jezreel. That guy's fit, okay? And he outran the chariot. That's all happened before. Then Jezebel says, I'm going to make you like one of those prophets. And then he goes on this journey. I think Elijah was physiologically spent. He was out of gas. That's not the right term, but he lay down under a tree and just said, Lord, let me die. Too busy? Wrong priorities. Sometimes wrong priorities. I don't know that Moses had wrong priorities, but that can be a problem there. Carrying what is not ours to carry. Sometimes we're trying to do that God side of the work instead of staying with ours. Spiritually negligent. I just insert here that sometimes as Christians, we jump immediately to the spiritual problem when we say that's the problem. And want to recognize that we need to maintain spiritual vitality, but it can well be other things first. Wrong attitudes, tensions behind the scenes. You mentioned relational issues, but I want to say this, folks. Sometimes it's other things, and it's not the things that we're experiencing, but it could well be that you are serving in a particular place in your family back home. You know there are things going on there and it's burdening you, and you hardly know how to think about it, and you're praying about it, but you've got to give you still have to serve, but there are these things going on. Sometimes it could be people who are in ministry and they're looked up to, they're servants, and they're struggling with their children or struggling with their parents. Or struggling in their extended family. All of these things can be extended kinds of issues, tensions behind the scenes, and then poor boundaries sometimes is part of the issue here with depression. So just saying that there can be a lot of factors. Let's move to a few pointers, okay? Hopefully a little brighter side here. I hope you haven't gone down emotionally as we've gone along here, but just recognizing that this is a problem, and it is a problem among God's people. It's not just sinners and wayward people who get depressed. folks, we need to recognize that. It's a problem that we can struggle with. So a number of pointers here. I'm going to just give you a few here, and I'll try to open it up then last couple of minutes for questions that you might have. But I am going to say that we need to nurture our spiritual vitality. Now, I know that there are times when in ministry it's like the waves of the sea, you get overwhelmed, okay? And just encourage you folks, it's not sinful to be overwhelmed, okay? But it's a problem if you stay that way, okay? So the overwhelmed should be followed by respite. And in that whole thing of ministry, having our times when we seek the Lord. You see it in Jesus' ministry. He did it. He went aside. And, you know, I don't want to joke about this, Jesus' ministry, but I really want to ask him sometime, Jesus, could you have sustained your ministry longer than 3.5 years? But when he was done, his work was done, okay? And so I'm just saying there's a place. But even Jesus, he went aside. He went off by himself. He had his times of interaction with the Father that were rejuvenating for him spiritually. Pay attention to your body. Just saying this is something that we need to do. Our bodies will show us actually signs of stress. And when they do, we need to pay attention. And, you know, sometimes it's not. My wife had cancer back in 2017, and that year of treatment for her, you know, I didn't have cancer, but I had a wife who had cancer, and I knew things, and I could tell things in my body that I was being stressed. Okay, just as a real, I'm just saying that pay attention to your body. That's one of the things that's, you know, God made us with physicality, and so third one here is one that I've mentioned earlier: know your calling. And I'm not saying that we should be selfish here, and if we have our calling and somebody asks us to do something, we say, no, that's not my calling. If you're a person that's over you, your supervisor says, could you do this? If you think it's not your calling, you should negotiate, okay? You talk to. But I'm just saying, know your calling, because your heart will be burdened by things that it's not yours to do. I'm just saying, if you've got a good heart. And so know your calling. It can be just really helpful in knowing when to say no. This can be, this can be really tough. I went from Deeper Life Ministries, where I was doing marriage counseling, to Faith Builders into a more of a teaching role. I still do counseling, but almost all of my counseling is people that I'm responsible for. Okay, so it's students, it's staff, it can be people from my congregation, but those are my priority, and I say no to people basically around. And especially the first year, it was really tough because there are people who knew me and the people who contact, and they're in need and they're desperate. But now I have a different, it's shifted here, and I have to say no to people, redirect them, urge them to go to somebody else. Identify the things that drain you. Just a really good thing. We should not assume that because we are filled with the Spirit of God, we can do anything. Okay, the reality is that some things drain us more than others. Know the things that drain you. And I'm going to just say, I believe that God's intention for us is that he has gifted us in certain ways. And when we're in our gifting, when we're in our calling, we should actually find it a joy to do it. And we can say something like, I was made for this. Okay. Now, you can do some other things. It's all right. I was principal at Maranatha Bible School for a number of years, but I learned through that administration is not my highest gifting. Okay. I learned that, and that's how we learn. And I finally told them, you should get somebody else to be the administrator, to be the principal here. And then they said, well, would you teach? And I said, sure, I'll teach. That was what I was made for, okay? So it's know your calling, know your gifting, and generally, again, there'll be times when you might be asked to do things. I still sometimes have to do administrative things, but I don't do it as my normal duty. So know your calling, know the things that drain you and the things that energize you, things that rejuvenate you. Even with my teaching, I love my teaching, but in spite of that, I like to do other things. There are some things that I do just for rejuvenation. Sometimes I feel even a little bit carnal, or I don't do wicked things, okay? but I read light stories that I don't, and then I think, oh boy, did this save my, did this rejuvenate my, well, it gave me rest, okay? And just find things that just enable. I collect fossils. I did ever since I was a boy, okay? I'd love to talk about fossils, but anyway, here. Things that energize. Know your limitations. I remember a man who was involved in counseling. I had really learned to appreciate this man. He just seemed to have a lot of wisdom and so on. And I talked to him a number of years later, and I asked him about his counseling, and he said, well, he said, I'm just doing that one day a week. And I was just kind of like, what the world? Here is just a loss. Like, and then he said, I've learned that's about what I can handle. There's a wise man. Know your limitations and your weaknesses. When we know our weaknesses, when we realize our weaknesses, we can actually take preventive. So one of my weaknesses is overloading. One of the things that I do is I don't take on responsibilities without asking somebody who's over me. Okay? I ask my wife, too. And she can let me know what I ought to do or ought not to do, if you know my wife. But she's also got a heart for ministry, and she doesn't want to inhibit me, and neither does she want to be my director. Okay, so I go to somebody over me. I was run it by them. I know my weakness. I take some precautions. What are your questions?
So on the last one, number 7, your weaknesses. That's a tough one for people that are perfectionists.
Uh-huh.
Because we're weak. We can't attain to our own aspirations. Now I got you, didn't I?
Now, here's the thing. Many times our weaknesses are right side by side with our strengths. Okay? Often a weakness is simply a strength that's overdone or not balanced or whatever. So, yeah, know our strengths and weaknesses. And it doesn't mean that there's a hard line there. Okay, but it does mean that if we know our weak areas, then we can take precautions. Good question. Yes.
So you've already established. You said that depression isn't something that just happens to like sinners or weak people. But would you say that depression is something that is just like a part of life and at some point is unavoidable, or like for situations where people experience depression, would you say that it's something you could have done steps to avoid it or?
Great question. David, what's my time?
So we started about 5 minutes late, so we're at time now, so I'm assuming we can take another 5 minutes.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'll try to give you time to get to your other workshops. So your question is...
There is no workshop after this.
Oh, that's right. You go to...
Open displays.
Ah, okay. Sorry, folks. Yeah, I've got an hour here. I'm sorry. So your question is, are there things that we could have done to avoid? Well, here's the thing we have to realize, that sometimes, sorry, you ask another question first. Is depression inevitable? And I would say no. I don't know that it's inevitable. I think discouragement, most people experience that at some point, okay? But those discouraging times, and sometimes even going into depression, may be teaching us our limitations. They might show us, oh, wait, you know, I've overextended myself. I was not paying attention. So they're learning experiences for us. And sometimes that can be so for me, some of the limitations ended up being I had to start pulling back because of family responsibilities. Okay, that was an issue. I'm pulling back now because of age, okay? But I'm just... So we learn these things. Can we do things? I am going to say that I think we learn there. But sometimes people learn that they really need to cultivate more gratitude, because one of the things that is happening with their entitlement way of thinking or whatever, they've ceased to be grateful. And so you can start cultivating some things that actually enable you. You can also learn how to bring your struggles and so on to the Lord or to others. Those are ways. Sometimes we realize that we have not shared. We have been helping other people. We've not taken care of our own. So we learn those things, and then we can sometimes avoid at times. Is that helpful? Okay. Yes.
With the list you gave us first, it kind of, and looking at that and how depression often brings out negative explanatory styles, where we convince ourselves that these things are more true, that they, like, that everything is impossible, we are alone. How do you approach somebody in a helpful way that is stuck in those negative explanatory styles in a serving position?
So you hear the question. So when somebody's stuck in negative explanatory styles or cyclical thinking that's negative, how do you approach a person like that? And just really instructive passage in the scriptures is Elijah here. Listen to them. That's one of the first things. Elijah was in a negative explanatory style. Remember, they have torn down your altars and killed your prophets, and I alone am left, and they're seeking my life to kill it. And then a little later, God says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said the same thing. Okay, he was in a cycle, a negative cycle. God didn't address that cycle right there. He listened. He gave him something to eat, took care of physiological needs. Okay, gave him something to eat, and gave him some miracle stuff too that helped him for 40 days. You can ask God for that; he might. But my point here is so listening, taking care of people, and then there is a point. There is a point where we need to address that and learn new ways of thinking. Are there other perspectives? But let me just encourage you: when you're interacting with people, think in terms of asking them what might be better ways of thinking first, then telling them what would be better ways of thinking. Okay, ask them what would be a good way to think about this. Okay, we've gone 5 minutes over. I'm going to dismiss you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.